Folks, I am really excited to talk about our newest sponsor for the coaching staff, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, also All-American Used Cars and Trucks. Two really, really good businesses. I'm going to start with Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust. You know, it's hard to find a good mechanic. It's hard to find somebody that you trust. And, you know, long before this situation came about, we had been taking our cars to Ruiz for a year, year and a half, and they've done great, great work. They're honest. They're upfront. They can do everything. They, you know, take care of your motor, take care of your brakes, tires, oil, so simple stuff like oil changes, brake pads, mufflers, whatever you may need. Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust are going to take care of it for you. If you are in the Omaha area and you are looking for a quality, reasonably priced, customer-friendly situation, you're not going to regret giving Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust a chance here. They are located at 4839 North 90th Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68134. You could give Esmeralda a call up there. Her number is 402-317-2572. And they'll get you taken care of. I'm saying this as a customer. We literally do not bring our cars anywhere other than Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust for anything that we do from this point for the last year or two. So again, another business here, All American Used Cars or Trucks. If you're in the market for a used car or truck, go check out Juan Carlos's business there. 144th and I-80, 14706 Schooner Road here in Omaha. Go check it out here. If you're looking to exchange a car, buy, sell, trade, whatever it may be, you're going to get an honest deal from honest people. So go check out Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust and All American Used Cars and Trucks. Good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and a Napkin podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to the coaching staff, where we are solving mysteries all over the place. Right before we come on, we're learning more and more about each other. There's more to learn every day, and I am learning that with my man, Mr. Tony D. Viss. Mr. Viss, how are you this fine Sunday evening?
Doing well. I had the day off, so wasn't in the gym today, and you know, did a little bit of planning for next week, putting some stuff together, and got outside, got a nice walk in. Mm-hmm. We're in the 50s today, and I've heard it's going to be like 18 by the end of the week, so might be one of the last ones I get in.
Yeah, we did. We waited long enough to where all the leaves were off the trees, and so our daughter is home from Thanksgiving break, and she was thrilled, Tony, thrilled to spend a couple hours raking leaves in the backyard. It's exactly why she came home for Thanksgiving break. Won't Genevieve. Here you go. Pay for that college tuition. Here you go. But I pulled out the old dadism, you know, if we just all work together, quit complaining. If we just all work together and we work hard, this will be done in like 90 minutes, you know. So,
that's a pretty good Ward Cleaver impression.
I'm more like Al Bundy. Let's be honest.
It's good.
Actually, the greatest, in my opinion, Tony, the greatest TV dad of all time is Phil Dunphy. I mean, that guy is just, whatever he touches, he's King Midas. He can do no wrong in my eyes. So, yeah. So that's just me. That's just me. So, yeah, maybe I'll get a part-time job, get a seasonal job at the shoe store or something like that, just to fulfill my Al Bundy dream. So, I'll score four touchdowns for Polk High as well. So, all right, episode number 109. We are off to a rousing start here. We are going to talk about avoiding upsets, but before we do that, Tony, again, I've got some non-basketball players. Whew. I've got an outfield for you right here. Are you ready?
Ready.
Ted Williams, Joe DiMaggio and Roger Maris, left, center, right. You think you might win some ball games there?
Field of all time. Holy cow.
Wow. Wow.
You could even maybe have us pitch for that team and they might still win.
I know. Exactly. And then we got a couple of hockey players, Bobby Hull and Gordie Howe, and then Drew Brees at quarterback. So, yeah, so pretty impressive. We've also got, I've got three basketball players with the uniform number 9, Tony. All of them retired. All of them retired. Two recently, one old-timer, but an all-time great. Played for the St. Louis Hawks. How about that?
Connie Hawkins.
Good guess. Incorrect.
Ooh, yeah.
Great stats. One of the first great stats stuffers of the NBA history, 50s and early 60s. Power forward.
Every time you say that, I always think Oscar Robertson, but it's not going to be the big O.
No.
Stat sheet stuffer, number 9, 1950s, power forward. I'm going to drive a blank in that one.
Bob Pettit.
Okay.
Bob Pettit. Okay. Yeah. So, and then two recently retired players. A point
Jason
guard.
Jason Terry.
Nope.
Point guard. Tony Parker.
Tony Parker. Yes. You got that one. And probably a 3. Played for the Sixers, most notably for the Warriors.
Andre Iguodala.
Yes, and it counts. Tony Davis from the baseline. Absolutely awesome. Yes, that is it, sir. You have got it. You have nailed it. And we are going to nail this podcast about avoiding upsets. Obviously, you know, we've got all sorts of different coaches that listen to these, Tony. We're talking to the coaches that especially feel like they've got a chance to do some nice things this year. And if you're getting upset, you've probably got a chance to do some nice things, but there's going to be upsets. That's why we play the games, and, we will see all sorts of upsets throughout the season. It's a great thing to be the hunted rather than the hunter, but you have to keep your proverbial head on the swivel, just like I did growing up in Sheldon, Iowa.
The mean streets of Sheldon, Iowa.
That's right. That's right, baby. So, but yeah, I mean, you know, it's part of the job. It's a privilege to be the hunted, but you know, people are coming after you, right?
Most definitely. And like you said, it is a privilege to have the pressure to be expected to win, but you still have to be able to perform during those times. And sometimes it's a tough balance because you have to have confidence, but if that confidence turns into arrogance and you miss the preparation, you miss the mental side of it in terms of taking everybody seriously, you can find yourself on the wrong end of a scoreboard.
Mm-hmm. And there's times where you can play well, you can do really good things, you can feel like you've prepared as well as you can, and you still get upset. I mean, it's still going to happen. So I think the number one thing, Tony, and this is a lesson that I learned early in my career, and then it was re-emphasized a couple of times as an assistant coach, where I felt like I would work for, I especially one coach, we just didn't consistently prepare. We didn't recognize the part of being the hunted. And so one of the things I really promised myself when I was going to be a head coach is we're going to treat every game the same. Every game we are going to prepare the same way. We're not going, if we're playing somebody that's not very good, we're still going to prepare for them as if they're the 3-time defending state champion or something along those lines. Now, you know, there's been games, and I've been fortunate enough to have those games where, you know, all we literally had to do was show up and we were going to win. But we also said, hey, this team is not very good. And we would come out and say, this team is not very good. But if we're as good as we say that we are, this is what we should do to this team. And here's the process that we need to go to get there, because we've got to get better every time we step out. So in order to avoid upsets, we scouted the same way every game. We prepared with the same rhythm every game. We had the same, as Coach Saban would say, the process in every game. We had the same goals every game. We never changed our goals up and down for any particular opponent. We had the same standards every single game, because instead of playing against the opponent, our opponent, every game was the game of basketball and how we wanted to play it. And I'd like to think that most of my teams were really consistent in that regard, and that we were able to improve consistently because of having that mentality of, it was never about Elkhorn, it was never about South Sioux, it was never about Omaha Mercy, it was always about the game of basketball, playing against the game of basketball. So my first piece of advice for anybody that's looking to avoid upsets is, you treat every single game the exact same way.
Mm-hmm. I one of the things I do with my team from time to time, we'll be playing, somebody good or somebody bad, and just ask them the question, hey, if we win tonight, how many wins does that add? And they're like, well, duh, coach, it's one. I'm like, but this team's really good, so it only adds one? Yeah, coach, it's just one. And then if we're playing somebody that maybe wasn't as good, okay, if we win tonight, how many wins does that give us? Like one. And I'm like, do you get the point? The fact that no matter who we play, it's the same thing. You get a win or you get a loss against that opponent. It's not, hey, we beat somebody good, we got a win and a half, or we got, a win in three quarters, or whatever it may be. You get a win. And so one of the big things is letting them understand that it's a game. And, you don't want to get too high, you don't want to get too low. And one of the things I like that you talked about there, Marty, was making sure that you approach everything with the same consistency, prepare the same. I'll be honest with you, I played against some really good teams that weren't that great coach. Like, the scout against them wasn't hard. Like, they run this offense and they do this defense. We would be done, with our scout in 15, 20 minutes. And I played some teams that weren't very good, but were really, really well coached. And we had to make sure we were ready for everything. And it might take 20, 25, perhaps as many as 30 minutes to get through their stuff and what they do. And so that's one of the things that I think you have to understand as well, is the fact that, it's about preparation. And whether it's a team that's stack talented or whether it's a team that maybe lacks some talent, you got to prepare the same way every time. Like, you're going to walk through what they do offensively and how you're going to guard it. You're going to talk about their defenses. Do they show multiple looks? Do they show one look? Are they a switching team? Do they fight through screens? Whatever it may be, you're going to go through their out of bounds plays. But you go through each thing, with them, and go that same level of preparation. I think that helps the team to understand that you prepare everybody for everybody the same.
Mm-hmm. What's kind of your first bullet point, buddy?
The first one I would just go through is the fact that, one of the things that I thought that you addressed there that was important, that you can play really, really well, and for whatever reason, just not your night. And a big part of that is the mental toughness side of it. And one of the things that I really stress with my team is staying poised, in all situations. Make sure you keep your poise. Don't get too high when the thing is going well for us and we force the other team to call a timeout. And don't get too low when we're turning the ball over or they're going on a 6, 8, 10-point run. Just make sure that your mental toughness, stay calm, keep your poise and composure at all times. And that was one thing that really kind of picked up on probably 2+ decades ago when I was in Harlan, because Mitch Osborne really, really emphasized that with his teams. And it just helped me to understand the importance of staying poised and composed at all time. And if an underdog comes out right away and they give you, a really tough first quarter, there's still three quarters left. Keep your poise and composure and see if, during that second quarter, if you can break their will, so to speak, or if you're going to be in a dogfight all night. But you can't lose your poise and composure just because the other team is competing hard. Because like you mentioned earlier, I believe they're trying to win too.
Yeah, I really like that about the poise part of it. And I think that's something I was not as good at when I was a younger coach. As I became more seasoned and experienced, I was much better at, okay, hey, look, we know what they're capable of doing. They did that really, really well. Now we've got to answer back, and just kind of say it just in that exact tone in a huddle. Let's say, like you talked about, that end of the first quarter huddle, and you're down 12-9 at the end of the first quarter, let's say. You know, hey, okay, we know they're a good team. Now we've got to answer back. Well, this is exactly what we're talking about. None of this is surprising to us. We prepared for this. Now let's go back out here. Let's go out. Let's do what we need to do. And I really like that thought process, Tony.
Because I think if you freak out as a coach, like, what's going on? You know, how are we playing like this? They're going to freak out too. Mm-hmm. And as a coach, you have to make sure you keep your poise. And I think that's so very, very important. Otherwise, it's really hard to play the game when you're freaking out.
Mm-hmm. I have, you know, something kind of related to what I was talking about earlier, Tony. Don't overhype or underhype an opponent. I think you just tell the truth about a team. Hey, they're really good. They're 3-5 right now, but take a look at who they've played. They're good. They're really competitive. They are hungry. We have to be ready to play. Hey, they're 7-1 and they deserve it, you know, whatever. But I think again, you kind of, you put, and the reason why I say that, Tony, is if you overhype every opponent, it's kind of the whole Lou Holtz thing. I just tell you what, guys. If Rice comes out and plays their best game and we play our worst game, anything can happen. No, it can't. If you show up, Lou, you will win by 4 touchdowns. That's what will happen. You know, and you can in football, it's a little bit easier because at that time you only had like 11 regular season games. But when you're talking 23 to 25 regular season games, and in some states even more, if you overhype every opponent. And then you beat your first teams that you've over the first 4 times you've overhyped somebody, you beat them by 30. And finally, you do play somebody that's good or that you're really worried about, that you see it as a trap game. Your kids, it's human nature. Oh, yeah, you told us that before, coach, whatever. And then the next thing you know, you're down 10 at halftime because your kids aren't ready to play. So I think it's really important to don't overhype, don't underhype anybody, just tell it like it is.
Yeah, stick to the facts.
Yep, dragnet.
Yep. Just the facts, man.
Folks, if you are looking for a good book, guess what? I have got something for you. Kings of Their Court, 3 Teams, 1 City, and the Greatest Basketball Season in Nebraska High School History is available today on Amazon.com. It is the story of Tim Cannon at Millard North, Josh Ludke at Creighton Prep, and Doug Woodard at Bellevue West, and the 3 teams that they had during the 2021 season, the chaos that everybody was living through. The story literally picks up with the outbreak of COVID in March of 2020, and it carries through for the next 365 days. Everything that these players, these parents, these coaches that they went through, from COVID quarantines to George Floyd to the politics of the time to just trying to get the season in a somewhat normal fashion with these 3 teams from this one city that were ranked in the top 25 in the country. Now, think about that. That would be hard to do in a New York and a Los Angeles. We had that here in Omaha, Nebraska. It is a terrific, terrific book. Of course, I'm a little biased because I'm the one that wrote it, but I think that if you're a basketball person or if you like a good sports story, a very amateurish version of Friday Night Lights for basketball, this is the type of story that you're really, really going to enjoy. So go to Amazon.com, go to books, type in Kings of Their Court, and it's going to take you right there to it. It's $19.99 for the paperback, $9.99 for the Kindle version. Folks, check it out. I think it's a really, really great story, and I don't think you're going to regret picking up a copy of Kings of Their Court. What else you got, buddy?
You know, it goes kind of like what you were saying there, Marty, just the fact that you have to treat all opponents with respect. And I think that's so very, very important, because if you go out there and you're like, we can just roll the ball out, we're going to be fine, these guys are terrible, your team's going to take on that mentality, that philosophy. And the next thing you know, you're going to be in a dogfight. And so you want to make sure that as you go out there that you're treating your opponent with respect, you're not underestimating them, regardless of what you think their skill level may happen to be. One of the big things that happens, you know, I was watching a little bit of college football yesterday with some of my time after practice, and Auburn's up 21-0 on Texas A&M and ends up beating Texas A&M in overtime. And I think a big part of it was the fact that maybe Texas A&M didn't take Auburn very seriously. And the next thing you know, they've got that surprise factor. And that surprise factor led them to a 21-point lead. And don't get me wrong, Texas A&M eventually came back and took the lead. Auburn tied it up and then ended up getting them, I think, was in the third or fourth overtime. But irregardless, you've got to make sure that as you go into the competition, as you go into the game, that you have shown respect to them. And that goes back to a little bit of what you're saying. You know, you don't want to overhype. You don't want to underhype. You just want to make sure that you stick to the facts and you tell them the truth. And if we go out here and we take care of business, we do what we're supposed to do, we're going to be okay. But if we go out here and we treat this opponent with a lack of respect and we go through the motions, you know, irregardless, and I think irregardless of talent level, I think the team that plays harder wins 70% of the time. And if you can go out and take care of playing hard and take care of business, you'll be in good shape.
I think one of the things that there's a couple of things here. I'll start with this one, Tony. When you talk about your team at any point, I think there's a multitude of things that you need to do. And I think one of the ways that you avoid upsets is you know your team's strengths and you play to them. You know, we here in Nebraska, we had the two big games on Friday, Creighton and Nebraska, it was a really, really cool thing to where the women played at 4 o'clock and then the men played at 7 on Friday here in town. Both teams won. The Creighton women won and the Nebraska men won by playing to their strength and knowing who they are. You know, Creighton women outscored, they hit 13 threes and I think Nebraska hit 5. They knew that was their strength. They played to that strength. For the Nebraska men, and I'm sure people listening to this have already seen it, or maybe some of you watched the film if you're local, it was a clinic in shell drill and defending the post. And they played to their strength. They played big. They played physical. They got inside the 3-point line. They got to the free throw line a lot. They played to their strength the entire night. And that's why they walked away with the upset. So knowing your team, playing to those strengths and staying with those strengths are hugely vital to avoiding upsets.
Yes. And a big part of kind of where you're going with that too is knowing your opponent, you know. And I get there are times in the season where there doesn't seem like there's enough hours in the day to get everything done and stuff like that. But as a coach, you owe it to your team to be prepared. You need to make sure, you know, whether it's huddle or whatever, you know, program you have, where you type up your scouting reports, you know, when you go through your walkthroughs, you've got to put the time in and you have to know what the opponent is going to do. And so you want to make sure that you have the strategies in place to be prepared for what they're going to do. And so I think that's another big one as well, is the fact that, hey, just because you're not playing a ranked team or perceived conference favorite or whatever the case may be, you still need to know your opponent, because if you don't, you're putting your team in a handicap situation there. And so you need to make sure that you have studied your opponent and your team is prepared, because as a coach, you know, you may not win games for your team, but you sure don't want to cost them. And sending your team into a game blind without knowing what the other team's going to do is handicapping your team.
Yep. What else you got, buddy?
You know, another one I go to as well is you have to have some adaptability. I know you mentioned the Creighton, Nebraska men, and, you know, Greg is a great coach, so I hope this doesn't come off the wrong way. But Kalkbrenner, I think we were talking about this before we went on. I think Kalkbrenner attempted a 2-point shot, is what you were telling me.
He did not shoot. He only shot one field goal, and it was a 3-point attempt.
And so you've got to be able to change and adapt a little bit. And so be ready to adjust your approach. You know, and if they're doubling and doing shell drill and doing whatever, you have to be able to adjust your approach during the competition. And again, underdogs are going to do some different stuff. They are. You know, if I was an underdog going in, what do you got to lose? You're not the perceived favorite. And so they might throw a jump defense at you. They might have, you know, a different offense than what they've shown at any time during the season. And you have to be able to adapt and change on the fly.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Wholeheartedly agreed. And they, you know, Nebraska did change what they, you know, normally they play kind of a three quarter post defense, and then they usually send a hard double team from the bottom side and rotate that way. And they went with a full front. I mean, they basically sandwiched Kalkbrenner the entire time. And so I'm guessing what Mack and his staff anticipated was they were going to be able to get the ball to Kalkbrenner, and then there'd be a hard double of some sort, and then they were going to kick it back out. And they were never able to, and the ball pressure was just tremendous by the Nebraska perimeters. They had a hard time even getting a clean look at Kalkbrenner the few times that he was able to find an angle, you know. So, yeah, you know, it's a game of adjustments, and you got to be ready for it. So, what else you got, buddy?
You know, one of the things that we see at different times is the fact that, you know, basketball, like you've mentioned, it's a long season. November, December, January, February. If you're fortunate enough and good enough, you play into March. But one of the things that has to be there throughout is that competitive desire. Mm-hmm. You know, and so regardless of your opponent, you have to remain driven. And one of the things that you were talking about earlier was competing against the game of basketball. One of the things I like to talk about with our team sometimes during these competitions is, who are we competing against? And, you know, whether we're playing Wash or Iowa City West or whoever it may be, that may be the response back. And I'm like, no, technically, yes, we are. But in a way, I would say, no, we aren't. What we're competing against is we're competing against our best. And so there has to be those things you put out there, those carrots, if you will, ahead of them to keep them driven and hungry throughout the season. And don't get me wrong, there's some nights when it's a rival, you can just feel the intensity, you can cut it with a knife. And there's other nights when, you know, it's a team that, you know, you may not light that fire under you. But if you're a competitor, you should have that intrinsic motivation. It shouldn't always be that extrinsic, you know, type thing, but that intrinsic where you're a competitor and you're competing against your best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's always the challenge, coaching against the game, you know, and making that drive and putting those standards into place. And yeah, I agree with you there. I think along with that, you know, there's certain things that you can call them on, Tony, when you're talking about playing against the game of basketball. And that, you know, another one of my bullet points was, you know, controlling the things that you can control. If you ever played for me, you heard me say that phrase, let's just say, quite a few times.
Really?
As Phil Dunphy, second reference, would say, if I got a nickel for every time I threw up in school, what's his son named? Luke. He says, you'd have 35 cents, Dad. He goes, I'd have 35 cents. Well, my players would have more than 35 cents if they said every time I said that they got a nickel. But, you know, sometimes, you know, to win is to not to lose. And Bobby Knight said that something akin to that at one point, you know. So what is that? That's taking care of the ball, you know, minimizing your turnovers, rebounding, getting to the free throw line, executing consistently on both ends of the floor, executing, you know, your sets, your offense, your defensive game plan, whatever that may be. You know, when you have that, and you kind of talked about it as well, Tony, that mental toughness, that drive to excel every time you step out onto the floor, then you're not surprised by anything because you're locked in, you're ready to go. And I really think that's a big part of it, is controlling those things that you can control to avoid those upsets.
Yes. And one of the things that I would also add there too is that I think you can kind of sense it, you know. Say, for example, you play Tuesday night, you get an opponent on Friday that might not be the most difficult game on your schedule the entire year. And you can kind of sense things come Wednesday, Thursday, perhaps, that, hey, we're not focused. And so one of those things as a coach where you can sense that going into it, mm-hmm. and you can hold them accountable as you go. Like, hey guys, we're not ready to go. This isn't the type of preparation that we want to have. You know, we got to make sure we are holding ourselves to that standard, controlling what we can control and doing things the right way. Otherwise, we're going to find ourselves on an end that we don't want to be on. And So I think that's another one, is just making sure going into the lead up to it, whether it's walk through the day, practice the night before, whatever it may be, but just make sure that you're holding them accountable to the standard in preparation for it. Because there are times, you know, we don't have it tonight. You know, they're a little bit squirrely, they're a little bit goofy, and just making sure that you hold them to that standard. And I think that's another one that as a coach that you can help out early rather than the night of in the first quarter when you're down 10 to 2 and, calling a timeout, reading them the riot act.
Yep, absolutely. I've got a couple more here, buddy. How many more you got?
One or two, yeah.
Okay. Go ahead. I think it's your turn.
Okay. Another one I went with throw at you, and we kind of touched on this a little bit earlier too, but just to expect the unexpected. One of the things is you go into those games, like if you were the other coach, what would you do to your team?
Yeah.
Going in. And if you think, well, I might throw a curveball here and junk defense them a little bit, whether it's a triangle in two or a box in one, diamond in one, whatever. And so maybe spend some time working on that stuff ahead of time so that when you get into that game, it's not the first time that you run your set against a box or a triangle or whatever the case may be. Offensively, with the shot clock here in Iowa, we've kind of gotten away from this a little bit. You don't have to worry about it as much, but those states that don't have it, what does an underdog want to do? Well, they want to shorten the game.
Yep.
Because if they can shorten the game, so they might come down and work clocks for a minute or two or go four corners on you for a little bit longer, but anticipate some of that stuff. Like, how could we speed them up to get them to play our style? Because again, as a favorite, you probably have the better players, the horses. And so you want more possessions, not less possessions. So how can you help that happen?
Yep. You kind of said something, it's a first cousin of one of my last two here, Tony. It's going to happen. I don't know about you. I've only ever been on one undefeated team in 28 years. We went undefeated, eventually we lost in the national tournament. But you're going to get upset. You're going to get beat. And if you're a good team, it's damn near impossible to run the table. And if you do, boy, you are very, very fortunate. So how do you, in your mind, as you're talking about preparing for what somebody might throw at us, you're preparing for that. What, let's say it doesn't work out and eventually you are upset. I think one of the things that you need to keep in mind is take that, you know it's going to happen. You need to prepare yourself for it. And eventually, how are you going to take those negatives and turn them into a positive? What can we learn from this? One of my players at one point, Jessica Hadavi, I'm going to give Hadavi credit for this. She, and ever since I had never seen anybody say this until she said it, but now I see it all the time. Win, what's important now, loss, learning opportunities, stay strong. So when you do get upset, what are you going to do with it? How are you going to take that negative and turn it into a positive for your team, for your program, for yourself as a coach? What are you going to learn from it? Oh man, I didn't see that triangle in two coming. We've got to be better prepared for that. I didn't think about that, that type of thing. And I think that's a big part of it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And some of the other things as I make my last point here, goes kind of with the mental side of things. Mm-hmm. One of the things we've talked about, poise, composure and different things like that. But here's some other ones, when before the game begins, having some of those mental rituals built in.
Yeah.
That could be some breathing exercise, that could be visualizing, yourself being successful, whatever, to help calm nerves and to sharpen their focus. I think that's something you can do. Make sure as you go into the game, as a coach, stay patient. If you've put in your preparation and you have a game plan, stay patient with it. Don't lose your poise and composure and begin to take some unnecessary risk. And maybe you get mad at a kid and you sit them for an overly long time. I mean, that's not what you need to do. Stay patient. Don't let the pressure make you do things that are outside of your scope that you normally do, but be disciplined and then trust that preparation that you've put in as you've gotten ready for the game and different things like that. And the other thing too is anticipate the other team's going to have some emotion. I mean, when you're a successful program, we're a highly ranked team, you have a target, so to speak. And so when you step on that floor, guess what? you're going to get most teams' best shot.
Yep.
And so one of the things that's going to be important there is to make sure that, you know, you factor that in ahead of time. Like, hey, this is their Super Bowl, so to speak. We've got to be ready to go. They might be flying around early and making hustle plays and, you know, trying to hype up the crowd and feed off the crowd's momentum and stuff like that. But we've got to stay true to who we are.
Yeah. You know, we would often talk about embracing that challenge. Hey, it's, you know, like when I was at Briar Cliff and we were really, really good, that was always everybody, hey, we're going to give pizza to the football team night tonight, have them come up. And we're like, great, you know, that'll just get our girls even more ready to go. We thought we might be in a little bit of a lull, but man, when they see that stuff, oh, that's going to get their competitive juices going when they might be not as locked in as what we maybe thought they were going to be, you know? So, I mean, different things like that, you know, is embracing those challenges. Hey, we are good. This is the privilege of being good. It's not pressure. Mm-hmm. It's a privilege to have people center their schedule around us and want to come after us. And I think that's a great selling point that you give your team is, hey, if they want to do all this stuff, you know what the best thing to do is to just kick their butt, all over this gym and have them walk out of this gymnasium disappointed where they thought they were going to come after us and we just took it to them.
I always tell our kids one of the best sounds in athletics is a silent gym when we're on the road.
Yeah.
Because it means you've taken the crowd out of it. You've crushed their hope, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. The last thing I had, Tony, was to avoid upsets. I think it's important that you develop depth to the best of your ability. Now, in high school situations, sometimes it's not as easy as just saying, well, just develop depth. You know, yeah, okay, yeah. But sometimes you only have six kids that can really play, and there's a huge drop off between six and the seventh kid is the superintendent's kid. That's, you know, you did just there. You know what I mean? But if you can, things like you said, Tony, things are going to happen. Stuff's going to happen. How do you react to it? So when it comes to depth, you're going to have to overcome injuries at some point. You're going to have to overcome foul trouble. You're going to have to overcome, you know, our best player is one for 13 right now. And, you know, he or she just doesn't have it tonight. So what's our option B? What's our option C? And if you're a really, really good team, you probably have those options. But if you just consider it, it's all going to be option A and everything's got to run through Mary or Billy. That's hard to sustain that. That's hard for Mary and Billy to do. And so to avoid those upsets, if you can develop options 2, 3, 4, and 5, and obviously option one is option one for a reason. I'm not saying that you shouldn't play through option one to a large degree, but if option one is taken away, kind of like what we were talking about with Kalkbrenner the other night, if option one is taken away, what can you do to with options 2, 3, you know, down the line here that is going to give you the opportunities that you need? And I think, you know, that's a big learning lesson that Coach Mack and his staff and his players will go through. They'll learn a lot from that when, okay, somebody finally took away our number one option. Now what do we have to do? And they're way too smart and they're way too good of players. They're going to come up with something.
Yeah. And, you know, I was watching the Iowa women today. They're playing Washington State. And in the fourth quarter, they've got their three freshmen that are in their rotation playing a lot of minutes. And that goes back to, you know, those games where you want to work on the depth and you want to be multifaceted and not just always play through this, you know, hey, we're always going to run flex or we're always going to, you know, do this or whatever. And so you've got to have a little bit of multi facets to your game so that, you know, it's not just, hey, if we can take this kid away or if we can guard this action on defense, we're going to really stymie them. And so if you want to avoid that, you have to develop options 2, 3, and 4. You have to have different looks and things and be prepared for those curveballs that other teams are going to throw at you.
Coaches, by now you have seen the newest thing coming out of a pen and a napkin, the opening tip Substack newsletter. I put an edition out there for free, and hopefully you see what a great investment this is going to be for you as a coach. I'm guessing it probably is, if you watch everything and listen to everything, it's going to take you almost 3 hours to get through everything on the opening tip newsletter here. What do we have in there? You've got an original article by myself here. Just thoughts, ideas on different coaching topics. Into the Lab. That's probably my favorite thing is the Into the Lab. It's me, another coach, and a whiteboard. And we're just drawing stuff up here. Stuff to help you out, to help you become better, and to help your team become better this coming season and beyond. Got another exclusive podcast. You heard the first one, Industriousness from the Wooden Pyramid of Success. And it's me and it's two semi-retired former girls basketball coaches, Matt Kern of York, Nebraska, Nate Wall of David City Aquinas here in Nebraska. And every newsletter, we're going to break down an aspect of Wooden's Pyramid of Success. Bookshelf recommendations from off the bookshelf, X's and O's stuff. I'm dropping in a university video. It's just going to be given to you there. You know, and I really believe in the products that I've put together. It's practical stuff that's going to help make you a better coach. And then we've got the Coach's Corner with links to clips and articles. As you saw, we had our two Olympic coaches, Steve Kerr and Cheryl Reeve. Just really, really good stuff here. And I know it's subscription-based, but goodness gracious sakes alive, as Coach Wooden would say, it is so affordable. $8 a month for two newsletters. That's $4 every newsletter. That's $2 every single week. Or you can get a year-long subscription, $75. That's 24 editions of the newsletter. That's basically $3 a newsletter. That's basically a dollar an hour if it takes you about 3 hours to get through everything that you're getting here. It could not be more affordable. It could not be more positive for you. It's going to help make you a better coach. So subscribe to the Opening Tip newsletter. Folks, you're not going to regret it. Well, Tony, you know who was never, ever not on their game, that they were always ready. They were never upset while they were on the road.
The Europeans, they always had perfect sets.
Always, always tough out of timeouts. Yes, that is Europe. They are always good there. Mr. Viss, it is your turn for trivia this week. What do you have for me, my friend?
Well, this one fell on my lap today because we are going to have a new number one in women's college basketball as South Carolina went on the road to Pauley Pavilion today and were beaten by double digits by UCLA. And so what I am interested in tonight, Marty, how many game winning streak did the Bruins snap of the Gamecocks?
I believe it was 43, wasn't it?
Ding, ding, ding.
Yes, and it counts. That's two Marv Alberts. We got two Phil Dunphys and two Marv Alberts. So
this is a great episode. This might be in the Hall of Fame for our episodes.
This is the one we're putting up for people to, you know, see if they'll pick us up on syndication.
Yeah. We try to take over for Tony and Mike and part of the interruption. This is pretty
We already got a Tony. Now, instead of a Mike, we got a Marty, you know, so let it rip.
It works.
Yeah. We'll retire our teacher pensions in order to do that. That'd be all right. So, yeah. We were so busy with other stuff. I recorded the game, so I'll be anxious to break it down here while I'm on my walker or on my walker.
Yeah, that old, huh?
seasoned and experienced. Senior citizens, although slow and dangerous at the wheel, still can serve a purpose. Don't you go dying on me.
While I'm on my walker.
While I'm on my walking pad in front of the television. It's not even mine. It's my son. So, but oh, yeah, 77-62. That's a beatdown. I knew Pauley Pavilion had sold out. But I hadn't seen a score, and I kind of lost track of that with the raking and the other things that we were doing today. So, wow, that's a big win for Corey Close and the UCLA Bruins, and they're up 20 at one point. Wow, that's impressive. But you know, it's good for the game, don't you think, Tony?
Oh, definitely good for the game. You know, early in the year going in, I thought South Carolina obviously would be number one with what all they brought back and everything. And I was like, they might have a chance to run it. And then you begin to look at, okay, what's UConn got? What's USC got? What's, you know, UCLA, whatever. And UCLA is rated fifth. And that's the fifth best team, beat the number one by 15. And then the other night, Notre Dame took care of USC as well.
Convincingly, so yeah.
There's about seven, eight teams that I really think have a shot. And I think it's great because it used to be, like you said, you know, well, who's going to win it this year, Tennessee or UConn?
Yep.
And now you throw seven names in a hat and pull a name out, you might have just a shot of sitting there and trying to predict it yourself.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess if Mel Allen would have been around seeing that result today, he would have said,
how about that?
So, big win for UCLA. You know who is not winning, Tony? The Philadelphia 76ers. I looked it up on Wikipedia, and underneath Philadelphia 76ers, it just said two words, dumpster fire. You know, they had the big team meeting, the vaunted team meeting. Tyrese Maxey apparently called out Joel Embiid on his tardiness and some of those things. And they followed that up with, they haven't won since the team meeting, the proverbial team meeting that gets everybody going in the same direction. Paul George is hurt again. Embiid has shut it down for a while now, it looks like. This is a team I thought had a chance to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. I think New York will have a better record than them, but if they're both healthy in a seven-game series, I would pick Philadelphia. That will not go in the Hall of Fame of my predictions here, Tony. It's a dumpster fire.
It is, and it's crazy because they're 3-13, yeah. And the only team they have a better record than are the Wizards, who've lost 11 in a row.
they're at least trying to lose.
Yeah, the only guy that I think that is the only pleasant surprise, I should say, for the Sixers, been Jarrett McCain. He probably will win Rookie of the Year. But it is the picture. I mean, if you look it up, you know, it would be the dumpster fire. It would have the Sixers right by it, but it's bad. And when Embiid's pulling some of the stuff, if the report's accurate that he's late and not showing up the stuff, if that's your leader, it makes a whole lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think, obviously, I think Nick Nurse is a heck of a basketball coach. I don't care. If you win an NBA championship and they had a chance to win it again that following year where they lost in the bubble, I don't care who you are. You're a really, really good basketball coach. It's just one of those things where they haven't been whole all year. But they're only as good as Joel Embiid is going to be. You know, last year they only won about 33% of their games that he did not play in. So we shouldn't be stunned that they're struggling without him in the lineup. And for all intents and purposes, even when he's been there, he hasn't really been there, if you know what I mean, Tony.
Yeah.
And so is it that big of a surprise if we really, really think about it? Now, I think everybody thought Tyrese Maxey was going to be able to pick up some of that slack. He would take another step forward, obviously, adding Paul George. That was going to be addition over the subtraction of Tobias Harris. But I don't think anybody, you know, Maxey was hurt. George is hurt. When they've played, they haven't been very good. And, you know, Maxey scored a lot of points but hasn't shot it well. So it's been a tough go in the city of brotherly love.
Yeah, and you and I both know that place will turn on you in a heartbeat. And they had big aspirations. I would have said they might have won the offseason. You know, they added, like you mentioned, Paul George, but they also added some other pieces. Caleb Martin, I can't say the guy they added from France's name. I apologize.
Oh, Gerson Versacelli or something like that, yeah.
Something like that. And then Andre Drummond. Yep. Eric Gordon,
yep.
Reggie Jackson. I mean, they added some really, really nice pieces to a pretty talented roster already. And I would have said that they were the biggest threats to the Celtics coming into the year. And Marty, the only good news for them, in all honesty, is the fact that the East is not you know, a breeding ground of
awesomeness.
I mean, yeah, if you go and take a look, the play-in right now is the Pistons, and they are technically what I would deem about four games behind the Pistons.
Yeah.
And so eventually, if they get healthy, maybe not once, but if they get healthy, they have a chance. And that would be a scary team to get into the play-in. But they've got some bigger issues. I mean, I wouldn't worry about getting the play-in. You've got to get the ship righted, so to speak, get Embiid to some stuff, get healthy, get some chemistry and different things like that. But they're in trouble. This is by far the biggest disappointment in the NBA right now.
Yeah. What do you think of the new All-Star game format?
I like it just from the standpoint of, I mean, you and I both, I mean, you watch it. It's not even glorified pickup ball, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
It's bad.
Yeah.
Anytime you can score 200 points, basically, is what those teams are getting close to doing. It's a joke. And so do something different. If you keep doing the same thing and expecting a different result, I think that's the definition of insanity.
Yep.
And you've got to do something to get some legitimacy back and some competitiveness. You know, it doesn't have to be, you don't want anybody to get hurt in the game, don't get me wrong, but the product that you're putting on the floor is an embarrassment, and it would almost be better not to have one rather than to keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the All-Star game when we were kids, not to go old man yelling at the clouds, but when we were kids, it was an event. It was watching Magic cook and Isaiah Thomas cook. And those, you know, I mean, it was highly competitive. And that is the farthest thing that it has been the last few years. They had that one year where they had the Elam ending. And that was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun to watch. And then ever since then, it's just taken it's not even a steady. They fell off a cliff with the product at the All-Star game. So agree with you there. Tony, it is the most wonderful time of the year. It is Feast Week, and it is tournament time here for college basketball. I sent you the list here. Take a look at some of these teams that are going to be playing here in these tournaments. Out at Maui, we have Iowa State, Auburn, UConn, Memphis, Michigan State, North Carolina. Out in Vegas, we have Houston, Alabama, Creighton, Texas A&M as part of that, some, I don't know, Players Era Festival or something like that. And then Duke versus Kansas out in Vegas this week. In the Bahamas, we've got Baylor, St. John's, Tennessee, Virginia. The Battle for Atlantis, we've got Arizona, Gonzaga, Indiana, Oklahoma. Tony, sans weather, because the weather in all intents and purposes is going to be equal in all places. If you and Rita are going to take a little college basketball holiday, where are you headed to over Turkey Day this year?
I would have to go with the one with Iowa State, Auburn, and that set, just because of the Iowa tie and wanting to watch the Cyclones. But also Auburn's pretty doggone good too.
Yeah.
But that would be the one I think I would have to go to. How about you and Carla?
Same thing. We'll meet you on the beach there. We'll have a couple Mai Tais and just kind of kick back and relax here. That just looks like you can go 1-2 and go, hey, that was a good run for us at this deal.
Played pretty well.
We played pretty well and went 1-2. I'm happy. I think Iowa State and Auburn are matched up together in the first round of this deal. Two top five teams. So, it's gonna be just a slugfest out at Maui. I think that's on the bucket list at some point. Would love to take a trip out there and maybe I could talk the missus into going with here if we got enough beach time and got to do some things that she wanted to do. But that one, to me, I don't think you'd go wrong with any of these events, but I think that one's at the top of the list.
Yeah, I mean, that's almost the preeminent who's who in college basketball right now.
Yep.
But yeah, Maui would be the one. And, you know, growing up as a kid, that was the one I would always watch the most, was the Maui tournament.
Yep.
And I would agree, that's got to be on a bucket list. Rita gets car sick, travel sick, you know, sick. And so I'm not sure if we would be able to fly out there. So that might be a Tony goes solo act, but maybe we could get her enough Dramamine or something that we could be able to get her there.
You know, just tell her she get to spend a week with me. You know, I mean,
there you go.
And we'll take our private jet. You know, Carla and I have got that.
Yeah. Pen and a napkin private jet.
The pen and a napkin private jet. Yes. It's just waiting in my hangar out at Epley, just, you know, waiting for me to fire it up. So right next to my Batmobile. Yeah.
I saw they were selling those the other day. I think it was like $3 million or something for them. So I wondered if you were going to. You're going to take the money you make off this and get you one. So it was good to hear.
Well, you know, I am just swimming in royalties with this here, you know. So we're you know, I forgot to tell you, we purchased that $2 million home in the gated community just off of a pen and a napkin royalty. So didn't do much in my former life, didn't do much coaching or anything like that. It was all podcasting. That's all it was. So.
Coaches, you know just as well as I do that we're always looking for new and different ways to motivate our players and programs. But sometimes it's hard to find that perfect source that we're looking for. Over the past 25 years, I've collected hundreds of handouts to help motivate my players and programs. And now I'd like to share some of my favorites with you. The A Pen and a Napkin 101 Best Handouts booklet is now available to you for only $15. In this booklet, you'll find motivational material for all types of situations and individuals to help you communicate your values to your players and program. For ordering information, you can either DM me on Twitter or email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com for details. Coaches are absolutely loving our Taking Over a New Program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com.
AZ Fudd back for Gino Auriemma and the UConn Huskies. Of course, Gino setting the record. I think it was it Fairleigh Dickinson or somebody that they beat, Tony?
Yeah,
you know, it was a no-brainer, no doubter. It was over and done with. But great to see her back. And of course, we talked about Gino last week and winning that. But you never want to see great players get hurt. You don't want to see any player get hurt. I don't care if they're a good player, bad player, anything in between. Extremely hyped player coming out of high school, just has not had the college career that she had hoped for, that anybody had hoped for. And hopefully this is her last setback and we get to see this UConn team at full force for the entirety of the season.
Yeah, I mean, coming in, she was talked about as being one of the greatest shooters in women's basketball history. And, you know, like you mentioned, she just hasn't had good health, unfortunately. I think she's played a little over 40 games in her collegiate career.
Yeah.
And just based off of potential, I was looking at a WNBA projected draft for, you know, with, I think it was Dallas that got the number one pick. They were going to take Paige Beckers and then try to remember who was going where, but I believe AZ Fudd was projected as the number four pick.
Wow.
Based off a very limited career that she's had. But that tells you the type of potential this young woman has. And you sit here and you hope and pray for her that she's going to have good health going forward and will have a very successful end to her college career and a very, very fruitful and successful professional career as well.
Yeah, speaking of the pros, nice tie in there, Tony Kornheiser.
That's what I do.
Lynn Roberts, the head women's basketball coach, hired head women's basketball coach at the University of Utah, was hired by the LA Sparks right in the middle of the season. Former A Pen and a Napkin guest Gavin Peterson, the associate head coach, will take over for the Utes for the duration of the season. I think I saw they were 3-1 to start out the year, but interesting transition. We've seen this with another hire. I think we've other than Stephanie White. White. The other two hires have been college coaches leaving the college game and headed to the WNBA. So I don't know. Let's see how this translates, Tony.
You know, I think her, and I'm trying to find the gentleman was hired from Florida Gulf Coast, I believe is where he came from and took over in Atlanta. But the two things that both of them have in common that they mentioned were, one, very good player development. And that was one of the things that the WNBA is putting a lot of emphasis on. Smesko is his last name, Coach Smesko from Florida Gulf Coast. Yep. And then the other thing besides player development that they both are really good at and known for is also very creative offense. And I think that's the one thing that you're seeing in basketball in general, not just the women's game, but basketball in general, is you want people that are very on the cutting edge of the new things, the new sets and different things are being run. And both him and Coach Roberts have that on the resume. And that's why they were hired up by Atlanta. And I think the Los Angeles job is a really good job to get. I mean, I know they didn't get the number one pick, which will be Beckers, but they got the number two pick, which they're projecting to be USC's post player that transferred in from Stanford.
Oh, yeah.
And I watched her against Iowa State. She's really impressive. And so you would have Cameron Brink, who she played with at Stanford, and Rekia Jackson as well. And so those are some nice pieces there for the LA Sparks as you try to rebuild that thing.
Yeah. She torched Iowa State for like 45 that night or whatever it was. So, she's really good. So, Tony, are you ready to step out into the big city?
Sure.
We are who's up, who's down here this week. Tony, I can go first here. Who's up for me? It is Mr. Franz Wagner of the Orlando Magic. I know it's Franz Wagner. So, you know, Paolo Banchero went down with, I think it was the oblique injury. He's going to be out till probably, they're saying, after Christmas. And a lot of people thought that Orlando might struggle. They, you know, they're not a great offensive team. And in the last, I think, seven games, he's averaged over 30 a game. Orlando is 11-7. Again, the Eastern Conference, it is not the most challenging place right now, but they are keeping their head above water. They are in third place in the East ahead of the Knicks, and they are doing that without their best player, without their all-star. And a lot of that is because of Franz Wagner.
Yeah, and the other night against the Lakers, I think it was Anthony Davis, missed some free throws, and Wagner stuck a huge three to steal that game from LA. And so, I think he's doing really, really well right now with Banchero down. Like you said, they didn't have much of a shot if he didn't step up, and he has stepped up in a big time way.
Yeah.
My guy that I got for who's up, I think sometimes we take this guy for granted. You know, he's a multi MVP guy, but it looks like he's playing at even a higher level than what he has, and that's Mr. Jokic for Denver. The one thing I would give you is just shy of 14 rebounds a game, averaging over 30 a game, and I believe is shooting over 50% from three. And so sometimes I think people question his love of basketball, and I would say this, Vardy, you don't just get better through osmosis. Like, you have to work at it.
Yeah.
And it seems to me like he has gotten better. He's improved his game. Looks like he might become a three-time MVP. And when you're shooting over 50% from three, you got to be getting some shots up at some point. And so that's my who's up this week is Mr. Jokic for the Nuggets.
Did you see the deal? I just saw this on Twitter where there was 0.3 seconds left and the other team was shooting a free throw. And they made it, and they just lobbed it into Jokic, and he like volleyball hit it like 90 feet down the floor, because it technically it would have been a tip, and so he just took it and smacked it, and it was a lot closer than it should have been. It wasn't even like a football throw. He just took it and popped it, and he's just so good. I mean, I think he's one of those guys that we're going to look back on, and I hope everybody appreciates how good the Joker is. because he is kind of one of one, especially in the modern AAU. It's all about athleticism and this and that and the other thing. Just an old school game, just goes out, does his job, doesn't bring any attention to himself. He just does what he does, and he is a joy to watch. I hope at some point I get a chance to see. I would love to watch him play live, just to see it. So
I would have told you that Nowitzki is the greatest foreign player, and I think Jokic has a chance to surpass him.
If he has another, I mean, I don't know if anybody's going to have a season like he. I mean, he's literally leading the league in points. He's not averaging a triple-double. He's leading the league in all three of those categories. Or he was at one point here. And obviously, we're not even a quarter away through the season. But even to do that through 15 games is amazing, or whatever the number is. You know, but if he continues to play somewhat at this pace for another 5 or 6 years, I think you have to have that discussion. I think Nowitzki won one MVP and the Jokers won three. They're even in championships. So, yeah, I mean, you got to let all that stuff play out, and you'll do the retrospective after it's all said and done. But it's pretty crazy. He's just insane. He's just unbelievable. So, Tony, who you down on this week?
Mr. Embiid, I know we talked about him earlier. If it really is true that he is late to stuff or not attending stuff and just whatever, I mean, and then once it got out, one of the things that he was the most worried about was how did it get out of the locker room? I understand that.
Yeah.
But how about an apology? If that's what you're doing, how about we change the behavior? Yep. That's probably the one I would say. And it's not obviously for his play because he's not on the floor. But that's who I'm down on.
Yeah. I have, I kind of went outside the box on this one, buddy. Syracuse men's basketball. I'm down. They're 3-2, but there are three wins. Now, Tony, you and I, again, were seasoned and experienced. We grew up on the Big East on the USA Network. Remember those battles? Oh yeah, that's where I fell in. One of the big reasons why I fell in love with basketball was Big East basketball on the USA Network and Big Monday and all of that type of stuff. And I just ate that up. And so throughout the 80s, I was a pretty big Syracuse fan. I was devastated when Keith Smart hit the shot over Howard Trice in 87 and that type of thing. Syracuse, you know, Boeheim very rarely challenged his program outside of conference play, in large part because the Big East was so good, and their schedule is a little bit better. But their first three games, Tony, they started out 3-0. However, the way they won those games, here are those scores. Their opener was against Lemoyne, and they won 86-82. Their second game was against Colgate, they won 74-72. And then their third game, they beat Youngstown State in double overtime in the Carrier Dome, or whatever they're calling it now, 104-95 in double OT. Those are games that Boeheim's teams used to win by 206. And now they are sneaking by, what has happened to the Syracuse of our youth, Tony? That is my question.
Well, they seem to be trying to get her back on board. I know, I think it's Coach Autry now. Yep. That's there. Doing a little bit different stuff defensively rather than the famous 2-3 zone.
Yep.
And then they've got Kai and Anthony coming in. So maybe they can get back to the glory days. But yeah, it's definitely not the Derek Coleman, Dwayne, Pearl Washington, some of the greats of all time that put on that Syracuse uniform. And like you said, those big Mondays, with Pittsburgh,
Georgetown.
And it was unbelievable, but like you, that's when I really fell in love with the game of basketball.
Yeah. Episode 109, Avoiding Upsets. Tony, any last words on avoiding upsets?
I would give you three words to avoid them. prepare, and prepare.
That's just one word.
The same word three times.
Oh, yeah. You ever see the Cheers episode where Frasier tells Woody the key to real estate is three things: location, location, location. He said, "That's just one word, Dr. Crane." Classic scene, classic scene.
That's the best, in my opinion, best TV sitcom of all time.
Yes, yes. I have my box set of all 11 seasons of Cheers sitting within arm's length. I'm touching it right now, Tony. There's Sam Mayday Malone and Norm Peterson. Yeah, Coach is back there.
That's great.
Oh, Cliffy Clavin. You betcha, baby. So, episode number 109 in the books, Avoiding Upsets. I agree with Tony. Prepare. Prepare for every game the same. Don't get up. Don't get too down. Don't overhype anybody. Don't underhype anybody. Just play against the game of basketball. And once you shift your focus to just playing against the game of basketball night in and night out, your job's going to get a heck of a lot easier, coaches. So hope everybody has enjoyed this one. Tony and I had a great time. What do we have? Two Phil Dunphys, two Marv Alberts. We had a Cheers reference.
It doesn't get much better than this.
It doesn't get much better than this. Absolutely right. So, coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.